Kilimanjaro Diaries. Finally, after a near eternity, I hear footsteps and Goddy's voice outside, and I spring into action, relieved that the wait is over. I wake up Max, even though I'd like nothing more than to let him have his sleep, here in this warm and sheltered place, and in silence, we begin our preparations for the last time. We put on layers and layers of clothing. In my case, that means my long underwear, both top and bottom, a medium weight fleece shirt, sweatpants, a thick fleece jacket, outer shell pants and jacket, two layers of socks inside my boots, Gore-Tex ski mittens, my beanie, a balaclava, and my jacket hood cinched tight around my face. We strip the backpacks of all but the most necessary items, but we are having trouble focusing on which might be those most necessary items. We make sure the hoses from the water bladders are tucked inside the backpacks because otherwise they will freeze. We pack my camera and my backup camera. We stuff as many packets of hotties in our pants and jacket pocket as we can fit, and then we open the tent flap and step out into the freezing night. It's already quite busy between our tents. Everyone checks their backpack one last time, tucks water bottles inside it, and puts their hiking poles within easy reach. Especially tonight, they will be absolutely essential. I walk around and dispense hand warmers, as I've brought enough to supply an army. I urge them on everyone, except Mike, who flat out refuses to use anything that's for wussies. Besides, he tells me, my idea of a hottie is something different. I laugh out loud. This is so typical Mike. He glances at me sideways, as if evaluating my hottie potential. But apparently, after 5 days of bathing by wet wipe and near constant beanie wearing and being bundled into every single piece of clothing I've bought so that my form is approaching spherical dimensions, my hottie appeal is found lacking. You can't stuff that kind of hottie in your pocket, he sighs wistfully and continues to lace his boots. Before setting off, we are served a small breakfast, if you can call it a breakfast at that time of night, of cookies and tea, which we force down against our will. Max refuses to eat, suffering from stomach cramps. I file this information away and give him an Imodium, glad to have packed some, but I do not connect the dots. He's also complaining that I'm making him wear too much and that he's hot. We've had this debate for, the last 5 years, and I've learnt long ago not to argue. Nothing out of the ordinary there, is what I'm thinking. At 11:30 p.m. on the dot, the time has finally come. On Goddy's command, we assemble outside, don our backpacks and start walking. Eyes and headlamps firmly trained on the feet of the person in front of us. That's all that will matter for the next 7 hours, the 2 feet in front of you. Whatever they do, your feet will have to do. It's as simple as that. But of course, nothing is ever as simple as it looks, and I can't help but feeling wary. Slowly, we begin the long trek up to the summit. The 10 of us, plus 5 guides. Goddy, as always, is leading the pack at even slower a pace than usual, if that's possible. Pole, pole, and then more pole. We're walking so slowly, we're almost standing still. And even so, we have to stop often to catch our breath. Just standing still is exhausting. After only 5 minutes of walking, my toes are frozen solid. I can no longer feel them, and I'm struggling to keep my fingers from the same fate by constantly wiggling them, which isn't easy while trying to hold on to my hiking poles. So much for those hand and toe warmers. They do admit heat, but it's no match for the cold, clear night at almost 5,000 metres. Or maybe they're just too old and have lost their power. You know how they say that hiking downhill is harder than walking uphill? Well, they're lying. Or they haven't attempted to summit Kilimanjaro yet.